Okay, we're going to be, as I said, we're going to be moving quickly through the notes, and we're going to be looking at the Jews from the beginning of law to eternity. And as we look at the Jews, we spent some time at the beginning looking at what takes place at death. And so back in the Old Testament, the Jews, they went to Sheol at death. And the unsaved, they went down to the place of torment, into the lowest Sheol, and they're going to be there until they're resurrected for the great white throne. And so that will move them on, but they're there in Sheol at this moment. The saved, Old Testament saints, up through the Gospels, up until Christ's work, and those who died before Christ's accomplished work on the cross and the coming of the Holy Spirit, also went to Sheol up through the Old Testament, up until Christ accomplished his work, and then saved Jews in the Old Testament were caught up. When he descended down into the heart of the earth, he did transport them. He transported paradise up to the edge of the third heaven, and that was in our earlier studies at the beginning of the quarter. And so they're awaiting their resurrection. They're not in the third heaven, but they're right up to the edge, is the way it's described in Ephesians chapter 4. That's verses 7, 8, 9 in there. And so you have it there up at the edge of the third heaven. Now, as far as the Jews in the Old Testament, they did experience God's blessing down throughout their history in the Old Testament. And some covenants, they were based upon God's covenants. And God made a number of covenants with Israel. And the first ones were given to Father Abraham. And we find that there was a number of promises given to Abraham. Some of them were conditional, some were unconditional. Most of them were unconditional. Now in Genesis chapter 17 and verse 9, you have a covenant that's called the covenant of circumcision, and that covenant was conditional. They had to be the males of in the land, whether they were of the Jewish offspring, if they were slaves or somebody who was settled in the land, if they wanted the blessing, they had to be circumcised, and that was this covenant of circumcision. That was conditional. When we move go back to the first covenant that God cut with Abraham, though, and then the technical term is to cut a covenant. We don't have time to go back and look at it, but you can read it in that chapter. You can read the descriptions of the cutting of the covenant, and you can read it after Abraham believed Jehovah and it was imputed to him for righteousness. Following that, God did put him to sleep, and they cut a covenant. Abraham slew some animals, cut them in half, and God walked through by himself. It was an unconditional covenant that God would do some things personally for Abraham. But when you get down to verses 18 through 21, God was going to give Abraham some specific, and his seed, some specific land. And so when he's going to give him specific land, he has Israel as a nation has never received all of that yet. They have had parts of it. They had the most in Solomon's day, but yet when Christ comes back to establish his kingdom, they will have every little bit of land that God promised to Abraham and to his seed back there in the Old Testament. And so they were promised land, and that's what Abraham will get. Now, so some of the promises and some of the covenants, like I say, you had one conditional, but you did have some conditional other conditional things too, promises that God gave. But a lot of them were unconditional, and they will be fulfilled no matter what Israel does. And that's the God will not renege on his word. And so God is faithful, though, and he will fulfill his promises in all of those unconditional covenants with Israel. And if they obeyed, if they were obedient, they would also get the promises that God gave in the conditional covenants. They would receive blessing. Now, I did put in your notes some things, and we don't have time to look these up. They're a great study in themselves, but the fact that we do have better promises. Israel had some good promises in the covenants, and years ago, I wrote a series of articles in what we call the dispensational briefs back when, and the dispensational briefs on the covenants, and we didn't quite finish, but we were almost there. But God did He did cut four covenants specifically with Abraham that related to Abraham and his seed. This is not in your notes; it's just dealing with the covenants. He did make more land promises and promises of blessing and cursing in Deuteronomy 28 through 30 something, but what is referred to as the Palestinian covenant there. In 2 Samuel 7, you had promises to David and his seed, which were in part to Solomon, but then went beyond Solomon to David's greater son, Christ, beginning down around verse 13. You can pick up a lot of that dealing with David's greater son. And God has another covenant. We'll just skip on down to the new covenant with Israel, which is what they're anticipating. Now, when we come into the book of Hebrews, Paul does contrast Israel's new covenant with what we have in spots. And if you don't read it carefully, some think that their new covenant is our new covenant, but it's not. Our new covenant is by Christ's blood. But I can't get bogged down, and I'm doing that. So I want to come back to the thought, though, that these unconditional covenants with Israel, they're not fulfilled in the church. God will fulfill anything that He has not fulfilled yet. And we can depend upon Him to do that. Now, when we come down to the church and the promises that God has given to the church, He has given us better things. And that is one of the key things in the book of Hebrews. We're told in Hebrews 8:6 that we do have better promises. We have better promises. We also have a better hope in 7:19. That better hope brings is something that the law couldn't mature anybody. He said, Paul says, but the bringing in of a better hope, it does mature one. And so we have a better hope. We have better things in Hebrews 6:9. We have a better covenant, Hebrews 7:22 and 8:6. We have better sacrifices, Hebrews 9:23. A better possession in Hebrews 10:34. And I do want to go over to the last one, to Hebrews chapter 11. And we do want to take a look at that one just for a moment. Read it in the English. There's an ellipsis there, and you don't see it. What's going on? It doesn't. And so we want to. I do want to read this, dealing with the Old Testament faith chapter. These people. You had a list of people who lived by faith, and they lived by faith before the law and during the law. But as you come down to the end, we want to look at the concept of God's promise, though. He says in verse 39 that all these having obtained, really it just says they bore a witness, they bear witness through faith, received not the promise. They didn't receive the promise. God having, it says, provided, really He foresaw some better thing for us. And so we have a better thing than all of these saints back there and listed before in Hebrews 11. But then it goes on that they, apart from us, without us, apart from us, now apart from us what? Apart from us receiving what God has promised to us, our better thing. And so He's provided some better thing apart from us receiving our better thing, as the ellipsis there should not be made perfect or mature. And so they won't mature until we receive our better thing. And so we have a better thing. We have better promises, and our promises all pertain to what Christ has provided for us. And when it gets down to what we have in our future tense salvation, when our salvation is complete, but it is better. And so we will receive our better thing before they reach their mature maturity, and that would, they're going to reach theirs when they're resurrected. They will get what was promised, to what you looked at in Daniel chapter 12 verses 2 and 3. And so they have better, they have good things. We're not taking away from them. God did provide some good things for them, but we just happen to have better, and that's by grace, not because we deserve it in any way. Now, when we look at the Jews today, at death they went to Sheol, but and they're waiting resurrection for those who were believers. They're all waiting resurrection, but believers will receive. That goes back to Daniel 12, 2 and 3, and the promise is there. But as far as the Jews today, but we do want to point you back to Romans chapter 11. And in Romans chapter 11, you have chapters 9 through 11 deal predominantly with Israel, and then with a little bit of branching off. In chapter 11, it does deal with Israel, but it branches out to Gentiles also, but it comes back to Israel in this chapter. But when you look at Israel in chapter 11, verses 17 through 21, you do find that they've been cut off from the place of blessing. And if you look at these verses, in verse 17, he says, since some of the branches be broken off. Now, what they're broken off from is the olive tree, but they're broken off of the stock, and the stock is not Israel. And some get confused because they want to make the stock of the olive tree to be Israel. But the Israel was in the place of blessing. This was where God's blessing was in the Old Testament. Israel was in the branches in the stock of blessing. And some of the branches, he says, since some of the branches be broken off, you being a wild olive tree, you were grafted in among them. And so it was, they were grafted in, and so the Gentiles, most of it are probably Gentiles, though I did have a Jewish uncle. No, I shouldn't say that. He thought he was one. It was in his imagination. But anyway, it would have been fine if he had been. But anyway, if you were grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and the fatness of the olive tree. And so you see there were some Jews who were left in the place of blessing. But when you notice, many were broken off. And probably you could say the majority were broken off, because God's dealing with the remnant of Israel now elsewhere. But he does have a few Jews who are left in the stock of blessing. But those who are the wild olive tree, the Gentiles, they have been grafted in. And so they're Gentile believers now who've been grafted into the stock of blessing, not into Israel. We don't become Jews, but we do partake of the blessings of the olive tree in the place of God's blessing. And so he tells them, he says, boast not against the branches, the natural branches, that is, but if you boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief, they were broken off, and thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. For since God spared not the natural branches, and he didn't, some were broken off. Now it says take heed, but really the ellipsis here should be fear. That's what he told them to do, but fear. And so fear, lest he also spare not thee. Now he just says you could be removed from the stock of blessing, not from salvation here. He's not saying you're going to be removed, but he's dealing with the blessing of the nation Israel. They have been broken off. But he says, behold, therefore, the kindness, not goodness, but the kindness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but toward thee, kindness. if thou continue in his kindness, otherwise thou also shalt be cut off. And so there will be Gentile judgment, but right now God is dealing with Gentiles, and so that's where the Gentiles are the ones who are in the stock of blessing now. But it is by faith that Gentiles really partake of and participate in the stock of blessing. But it's not something that's going to be going on as something that will always continue for the Jews. The Jews will be restored in verses 23 through 25. Deal with that, that they will be restored. And he does say that God is able to graft them in again into verse 23, and he can cut you out and he can graft them back in at the end of verse 24 and so forth. But I want to go back and just look at the fact that right now God is dealing with Gentiles, and he's saving more out from Gentiles than out from Jews. And so he's not saving all Gentiles any more than he always saved all Jews, but it is out from the Gentiles that God is now taking out a remnant for himself. But when you look at the Jews now, they have been, at this moment, they've been judicially blinded. And remember that mankind is... We are blind. Before you're saved, you are blind. You have natural blindness. It's called, it's in 1 Corinthians 2:14, but it's called, there it's referred to as natural, but it's the word for soulish. They really pertain to their emotional makeup more so than otherwise. They have natural blindness. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4, they have satanic blindness. And so Satan will snatch the gospel out of their hearts. But that's true of Jew and Gentile alike. But when it comes to the Jew, because of their rejection of Christ, they do have an additional blindness, and that's what we see in verses 7 through 10 and then down in verse 25. But it says in 7, I'm just going to point out at the end, there's an election, but the election hath obtained it. What they've obtained is election of grace. In verse 7, but the end of verse 7, I just want to point out, and the rest were blinded. And it's in fulfillment of Isaiah chapter 29 and verse 16, but as you read it, it says, according as it is written, God hath given them the spirit of slumber, eyes that they should not see and ears that they should not hear unto this day. And so this is judicial blindness right down to this day, Paul says, and David saith, let their table be a snare. Going back to the 69th Psalm, the 22nd and 23rd verses, and a trap and a stumbling block and a recompense unto them. Let their eyes be darkened that they may not see, and bow down their back always. I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? May it never come to be, he says. Not God forbid, but may it never come to be, is his wishful statement, but rather by their trespass. And here you have a verbal, you have the word for trespass. Salvation has come unto the Gentiles, for to provoke them to zeal, really. And now if the trespass of them is the riches of the world, and the diminishing of them the riches of the Gentiles, how much more their fullness. Now, I guess I went beyond, but you do see the blindness back up there. Their eyes are darkened, and what speaks of their eyes are blinded at the end of verse 7, I didn't point it out when I was there, but when you look at it, it is the word for hardness. And so it's like they have spiritual cataracts, is the way I would see it in a sense here. Their eyes are hardened. They're blinded. And so they really can't see clearly. They can't see. Verse 25, for I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant concerning this mystery, lest ye should be I'm just going to read it as it is here. Wise in your own conceits, that blindness in part has come to be to Israel. And so you see, it has come to be from a part, is really what it says, to Israel, until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And so right now, Israel, the nation Israel, a Jew, is he has another blindness that he has to get through. And the Holy Spirit has to convince him of the gospel, but the Holy Spirit has to work through three levels of blindness to convince the Jew. And so they have a triple blindness as compared to the natural man. Now, back in Deuteronomy 28, alluded to this chapters earlier in passing this evening, but we go back to Deuteronomy 28 and 64 through 67, we do see that they've been scattered. And they were told that they would be scattered. If you go back to chapter 27, you have some, especially in 27 and part of 20, and you have curses all through 27 when you get down, especially picking up about verse 13. You get over to chapter 28, you have the blessings moving down through, pretty well down through this, down till you get down to about verse 15 or thereabouts, or 14. But God would bless them if they, with health, wealth, they'd have happiness. They would be, God would provide for them. And it's all described there. But if they went after other gods and they didn't keep the commandments, then the curses would be upon them again, and beginning in verse 15 of chapter 28, and you have the curses of down in verse 45 referred to, but you haven't described down through this chapter a lot of curses upon the nation Israel. Well, when we come here, they have been scattered, and it says in verse 64, "And Jehovah shall scatter thee among all people from one end of the earth even unto the other, and there thou shalt serve other gods, which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, even of wood and stone." And it goes on to describe further. Well, they have been scattered, and they're no longer in the land of promise, which they entered leaving through the Exodus. And so they are not there. Now, they've also been brought low, and in chapter 28, back to verse 44, I want to point out just here that he shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. But notice the last part of the verse. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. Addressing the Jews, you're going to be the tail. They're not the head of the nations. Now, that's quite an interesting thing, because they had been the head of the nations. And so God had made them initially. They were to be in God's blessing when he chose them. He made them to be the head of the nations and not the tail. But it is reversed, and it is reversed right now. And that's where they are. If you just jump across the page to verse 13, minus across the page anyway, but in verse 13, "And Jehovah shall make thee the head and not the tail." Now see, this is what God had promised with the blessings. "Then they would be the head and not the tail, and thou shalt be above only, and thou shalt not be beneath, if thou hearken unto the commandments of Jehovah thy God, your Elohim, which I command thee this day to observe and to do them." And so they were to do those things, but they didn't. And so they're in captivity, they're in dispersion. Even though we do have a nation Israel today, God, that may be the God's preparation to bring his people back into the land, we don't know that for sure. But they are there. There are some there in the land, and that's what we see anyway. So when we look at the Jews today, though, they are no different than the Gentiles now as far as their relationship to God, except that they do have a triple blind. They're just as unsaved as the next man. And I want to go to Romans chapter 3, and I think I had 3:22, but that deals primarily primarily with those who are believers. Down there a little bit later, when he describes that, but he does say there's no difference there. But I do want to look back at verse 9, and this is more applicable to the Jews today. In verse 9, what then? Are we better than they? That is, better than the Jews? We Gentiles better than the Jews? He says, not at all. No way. For we have before, proved both Jews and Gentiles. I think it says that we've been accused beforehand, both Jews and Gentiles. But notice where they all are, that they are all under sin. All under sin. And so that's the condition of the unsaved man, whether he's Jew or Gentile. All are under sin. And they all need salvation. Now just, I'm going to refer to it here and later on, but in 1 Corinthians 10:32, God sees three races, remember. You're not to give offense neither to the Jew nor to the Gentile. It says Greek, but a non-Jew is what it means, a Gentile, used of Gentiles, nor to the church of God. And so you're not to, and so God sees three groups today. But when it comes down to Jew and Gentile, there's no difference. They're all under sin. As a result of the fall of Adam, that's where the whole race is, apart from the work of Christ and the application by the Holy Spirit through faith to those who do believe the gospel, that Christ did die on the cross for our sins and was buried and rose again the third day. And so we do know that that's the condition of the Jews today. Now, we need to move on, and I'm going to move a little quicker on this. I'm realizing I'm never going to get through with any of this, but I do want to kind of give you the overview. Now, the Jews in the tribulation, the main place you can see the tribulation with the Jews is in Matthew chapter 24 and Revelation. You do have a few chapters, some chapters, you put them all together, you can put them together. But I'm just going to kind of move through here quickly on these. I do want to point out that in Matthew 24, though, the disciples asked the Lord, they showed him the buildings of the temple, and the Lord told him that there wouldn't be a stone standing upon stone and so forth. And then they ask him three questions in verse 3. Tell us. And they all came up to him individually and asked him this question. Tell us, when shall these things be? So they asked, when? And then they said, and what shall be the sign of thy coming? A second question. A third question, and the end of the world. Now, it's not the end of the world here, it's the end of the age. It's not the word world here, but it's the end of the age, and that would be the legal age in which they were living. And so the Lord doesn't answer the questions outright here, but he does answer the end. He's going to tell you when the end shall be, and then he will refer to this coming of the Son of Man. And so he will refer to it. But when we look at this, you have the beginning of sorrows in verses 4 down through verse 8. And you notice verse 8 says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. And that's going to correspond back to the time of Jacob's trouble back in Jeremiah 30, verses 6 and 7. These are descriptive of birth pangs here. But this is going to be the time that's going to begin. And you can read through there on your own. And you can see there are going to be many deceivers, going to have rumors of wars and all these things, kingdoms rising, earthquakes, all these different things going on. But they're going to be more severe than any other time. But they're going to be a lot of them. We're going to get to the more severe in a little bit here. But in Daniel 9:27, you have this beginning with the signing of the covenant. And then during this time, there will be a temple, priesthood, and sacrifices. Again, Daniel 9:27. The Jews are going to be back in the land. And you see that in Ezekiel 38, verse 14. They're going to be at peace. in Ezekiel 38:11, and then they're in verse 14, they're safe in the land. And so it's not a reference to today. I said in your notes that they you have the nation there. It's very precarious, but Christ could come at any moment and catch us away, and things could build up, and the people who are there now could be the basis for some of those Jews who will believe during the tribulation, and the rest will be judged. But they will be back in the land. First of all, they're going to be back in unbelief in Ezekiel 39, verses 25 through 29. And it's during this time, at the beginning of sorrows, that you're going to have the seven seals opened. And the seven seals of Revelation 5:1 through 8:11, you have reference to the seal judgments. And so these are going to be judgments that are going to be upon the Gentiles. They're not going to affect the Jews. The Jews are going to be protected from these judgments. But then, as we come down to verse 9 and pick up at verse 9 down through verse 14, now we come into the Great Tribulation, and so you have another outline here down through verse 14, and it describes how the Jews are going to be hated and so on, persecuted. You're going to have a lot of betrayal, false prophets, and so forth. And then in verse 13 it says, "But he that shall endure unto the end." Now they ask, what the end of what? The end of the age, the end of the legal age. And so it's going to be completed in the future, but this one shall be saved. He'll be delivered. He'll be physically delivered from this time of tribulation. And then it goes on to describe and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the inhabited world. It's a word for wherever men live on the earth, for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So when shall the end be? It's going to be when this gospel of the kingdom, this is the gospel that Matthew emphasizes a lot, it's the gospel of the kingdom, but it's the kingdom of the heavens, kingdom he's speaking of, and it's the gospel concerning the kingdom of the heavens, and the king is coming. And so that's the good news, the king will come. Now in verses 15 through 28 you have some details of this, and I just want to drop on down. It's going to be a severe time for the Jews. You can read through, but in verse 21 it says, "And then shall be great tribulation, such was not." It never was previously, and isn't. There's never been anything like it away from the beginning of the world. And I would say here, whenever you can take world, the beginning of something, it's the beginning of the universe. There's never been a time like this right up until this time, as Matthew writes it. No, nor ever shall be. It'll never come to be like that. There will never, ever be anything like this tribulation. So that's the great tribulation. Nothing ever like it before. And during this period of time, you will have the trumpet judgments that are going to affect the land of Israel back in Revelation chapters 8 and 9. And this is going to keep the Gentiles' minds off the Jews there. The Jews will have left the city of Jerusalem, and Revelation 12, 6 and 14 does describe their fleeing away. But in 15 through 20 here in Matthew 24, it does describe how they're to pray about their flight, when they flee away. They don't want to have certain conditions then, because it would make it difficult, if not impossible, to escape. And so, but they will come under the wrath of Satan. And again, back in Revelation 12, verses 12 and 13, they will come under Satan's wrath. And in Daniel 9:27, the beast as well. Now, during this time, well, keep your finger here just for a moment. I will come back here for a moment to Matthew 24. I can't spend a lot of time back in the book of Revelation, but in Revelation, well, I'm just going to refer to it. I got to turning there, but when we go back to Revelation 7 and verse verse 4, you do have the 144 who are scattered over the earth. And I was going to take you there, but I don't think we have time to. But there, in the first three verses of Revelation 7, they're sealed. They're sealed to be protected, and it also identifies them as God's witnesses as they're sent out. And they're sealed to be protected from the elements and that are going to be taking place during this second half of the tribulation, and also from demons in verse 4. But they're going to be sealed right in the first half of the tribulation, but they're going to be spread out throughout the world after that. Now, they're only going to be... We have two other witnesses who are going to be left in Jerusalem, and Revelation 11, verses 3 through 12, describe the two witnesses. Now, the two witnesses, one of them, there's no doubt, will be Elijah. There are reasons to Elijah. God did spare Elijah, and Elijah is coming again, he says. And so one would be Elijah. Now, Moses, others think it would be Moses, but it would be somebody like Moses. That's one thing we can say. It would be somebody similar to Moses, a contemporary Jew living at that time. But he will do things similar to what Moses did or what God did through Moses at that time. So you do have these two witnesses there who will be in the city, and they will be slain because of their witness and so on there in the city, but they will be resurrected. Now, when you get down to the end, the non-elect Jews are going to be purged out of the kingdom. And you can see that back in Ezekiel 20 and verse 38, but in Matthew 24 again, I did say we'd be back here, but we do have the coming of the Son of Man. I will point out that it does speak of the sign of the Son of Man coming, and it's going to be coming against a pitch black sky, and you have that described in verses 29 and 30, but verse 30 says, and then shall the sign of the Son of Man appear in heaven, and every eye is going to see it coming down out from heaven. And so it's going to, this sun will be darkened, the sign will come. I believe the sign is the New Jerusalem, which will come and be a satellite over the earth, and it's going to, the Gentiles are going to walk in its light, and so it's going to lighten half of the earth, but the Father and the Son are described as the light of the new Jerusalem back in Revelation chapters 20 and 22 and 19. I think you do have reference there, but we can't go back there at this point. But I do want to point out that people are going to be living when the Son of Man does return, just like they did in the days of Noah. But they're going to be doing things, nothing wrong with the things that are described verses 37 and 38. But they didn't know when the flood was going to come and take them away. Now, I just want to point one thing out in verse 39. Who was taken away? Those who were unbelievers were taken away in the flood in Genesis 6 and following. But after Genesis 6, when you get down to the flood coming, it took away the unbelievers. And so this is not the rapture in verses 40 and 41, but this is going to be the second coming of Christ, and he's going to take, this is dealing with Jews here in chapter 24, then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Now, who's going to be left? The one who is a believer, he's going to be left to settle on the earth and to remain on earth and enter into the kingdom. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. But the ones who are taken, they're taken to judgment, and those who are left are going to enter into the kingdom here on earth when Christ comes back and establishes his kingdom. And so there's a warning to those who live at that time, to Jews living then, to watch, and they don't know when their Lord's going going to come and so forth. And so we'll have to leave the passage there. But when the tribulation, the great tribulation is done and Christ is judged, come in judgment, removed the rebels and such, when we get to the Gentiles in a moment, I'm going to take you there right now instead of waiting till we get there. But over in chapter 25, you have the sheep and goats when the Son of Man comes in verse 31. And I just want to point out a couple of things over here. Verse 32 says that, "And before him shall be gathered all nations, all Gentiles." So 25 is dealing with Gentiles, 24 is addressed to the Jews, and over here it's Gentiles. He's going to separate them one from the other, one from another, as the shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And so the sheep will go to his right hand, the place of blessing and privilege, but the goats on the left. And so they're going to be going to judgment. You see the sheep in verse 34, they're going to inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And so they're going into the kingdom, and those who are unbelievers, and he describes what the believers did. I believe it's what they did to the 144,000 as they're out ministering. They did provide for them, even though they didn't have the mark of the beast, and food, water, clothing, and all of that was at a premium. They would give up their very last to the 144,000. But the goats, he says, they didn't demonstrate any faith. And in verse 46, they're going to eternal punishment. And so they're heading out to punishment. And so those are the Jews during, that's the tribulation. Now in the kingdom, they're only going to be saved Jews. Romans chapter 11, could have read the verse when we were there, but verse 26 says, and that's after the fullness of the Gentiles has been fulfilled, and then all Israel shall be saved. And this is the time when all Israel will be saved. Only saved Jews will come out to go into the kingdom. And so there will be no unbelieving Jews entering into the kingdom. I read Deuteronomy 28:13, where we see that they will again be where if they were obedient, they would be the head of the nations, and they will be restored to that place. Now we haven't time to go back to Ezekiel 48, but you do have a description there of the breakdown of the land, and so you have by tribe, each tribe, and what they're all going to receive, and the layout just like it was when they entered into the land. Back in Joshua's day, as the land was divvied up, that's going to be divvied up again. They'll be back in the land, and all their meat needs will be met. They will have feeling and healing in Ezekiel 47:12, and the earthly activity will be centered in Jerusalem. Isaiah 2:1-5, an interesting chapter there, interesting things there, but they will be centered back in Jerusalem again. Now, if we had time, but I don't, and I probably shouldn't even mention it, but in one of Kenneth Weiss' volumes, he has a diagram of what it's going to be like. Jerusalem's going to be a different city in a different locale. It's going to be a big city in those days. When we study the descriptions of it, he does give a nice little diagram of some of the layout of the land. It was helpful to me back when to look at that. Now, we do need to look at the Jews in eternity. And in eternity, in Isaiah chapter 66, the Jews, and I guess we will take a minute to look at that. And while we're turning to Isaiah 66, this will be the time when the kingdom is established. Christ will establish his kingdom. And all of the promises back in Genesis 15, verses 18 through 21, in the first covenant with Abraham, they will be possessing all of that land. And Abram was promised a new earth. he's going to have that according to, as in Romans 4:13. When he was living on earth, he didn't even get a foot's breadth of land that really was a possession in the, as God had promised it to him, but he and his seed would get it in the future. But in Isaiah 66, verse 22, we read, "For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I, on my part, will make," he's going to fabricate these, he says, "shall remain before me, saith Jehovah, so shall your seed and your name remain." And so he's anticipating the future, out in eternity future. They will possess the new earth, as God promised to land to them through Abraham, as Abraham's seed. They will receive that. Now, this is true of us as well. When we're going to be affected in the same way over in chapter 65 and verse 17. Except we're not going to be on the new earth, we're going to be in the new heavens, as we pointed out last week. "For behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come to mind." It won't come upon your heart again. And so that's kind of that will be a comfort to them. It'll be a comfort to us as well. We won't remember things as they are now, and right now we see things of beauty here upon the earth, but the new heavens and new earth will be a place when righteousness will settle down and feel at ease here upon not here, but upon the new earth and in the new heavens. But we'll be in the new heavens, and that's 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 13. We noted that last time, where righteousness will settle down and feel at home. And the Jews will also be experiencing that righteousness as it's settled down and at home. Right now it is not. Now, the last thing that we're going to try to cover in a few minutes is a lot of information. And I'm just going to give you a quick overview of the Gentiles from the time of Abraham to eternity. Now, just remember back originally, up until Abraham, how many races were there? There was one race, the human race. And so that was what you had, mankind, in Genesis 11, 1, 7, and 9, back at the Tower of Babel. There was just one language, one race. But God confounded the languages so they could no longer understand one another. And then as time moved on into the days of a fellow named Peleg, probably around Job's era, the earth was divided and they were spread out. God spread them out. But as a result, they could no longer communicate with one another as they had before, and so now things are going to change. There's still one race, though, but the races are divided up now in God's plan. Now you have different races in the human race as a result of these, of some things that took place, but when you get down to God's perspective, Jew, Gentile, Church of God, the Jew, Gentile began with the promises given to Abraham. And so the first time that you actually find the term Gentile is in chapter 10 and verse 5 and following of in the genealogies there. And so described the generations of the sons of Noah with Abraham. When God made covenants with Abraham, now all of a sudden you have a seed, a different seed now. And so now God chose Abraham's seed, and his seed, we can't go back to the Old Testament again, I hate to keep saying that, but we can't go through all of that, but the seed, Abraham's seed went through Isaac and Jacob, and Abraham had other sons. Isaac had Jacob and Esau, but it was through Jacob, and then through the 12 sons of Jacob. But it passed down through the 12 sons of Jacob, and they were the ones who went down to Egypt, 76 persons, and they came out a great nation. 400 years later. Now, as far as the Gentiles today, they're also liable, they're under sin, just as the Jews and so forth. and we pointed out that they have been grafted into the place of blessing in Romans 11, 15 through 25, which we noticed. I do want to look at the next couple of verses, though, in B3 as we go back to Acts chapter 15. In Acts chapter 15, this is the first church council, and Peter has spoken as to how God used him to take the gospel to the Gentiles first, and you have the description of that now. But James picks up where Peter left off, and I'm going to pick up in verse 13. And after they had held their peace, James answered, saying, "Men and brethren, hearken unto me. Simeon, that is Peter, Simon, hath declared how it says God, it says at the first, it should read that God for the first time did visit a quality of Gentiles. God didn't deal with the Gentiles in the Old Testament. And so this was the first time that God did this. When Simon Peter went to the household of Cornelius back in chapter 10. And so when he did that, he visited the Gentiles for the first time to take out from them. And it is out from them very strongly with a preposition there, a people for his name. And so God began something different with the household of Cornelius. He began to take out from them a people for his name. And so this people he's taken out from them, we'll see they're both Jews and Gentiles. And to this agree the words of the prophets as it stands written, after this. Now that is not in name that you, I can't spend time, but I want to point out that the first part of this, it says after this, that is, this next verse comes out of Amos chapter 9 verses 11 and 12, but if you go back and look at it there, it does not have after this. After what? James adds this in here. And so Amos is not saying after this. James says after God has taken a people out for the first time for his name, in verse 14, now James says after this. Now he goes back to Amos, I will return and will build again the tabernacle of David. He's going to build the tent of David, which has fallen down, and I will build again the ruins thereof, and I will set it up. And that the residue of men, that is the here reference would be to the Israelites, might seek after the Lord, and all the Gentiles upon whom my name is called, saith the Lord, who doeth all these things. And known unto God are all his works from the beginning of the age. So as you look at this, though, God is going to, first of all, he's taking out for himself a people for his own name right now. This is the first time it happened, and he's doing that now. But after he's taken out this people for his name, he will return, Christ will return again, and he's going to build up the tent of David then. And so when you look at that, I want to just go over to Ephesians 2:15, and just going to move right into it. There was a wall. The law was a wall between the Jews and the Gentiles, but he says that really that Christ he rendered inoperative. He says having rendered inoperative by his flesh the enmity, the hatred, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, in order that he might. And he says in order that he might create and himself from two. Now, two what? Jew and Gentile. One new man, so making peace. And so he is taking out from the Gentiles a people for his name, but at the same time, he's created in himself out from two, Jew and Gentile, one new man. And so today, God is saving Jews and Gentiles, but he's primarily dealing with the Gentiles, as we saw in Romans 11, as the Gentiles are grafted into the place of blessing. And so today, this is where we are at this moment. But we're no longer seen as Jews or Gentiles. Now we are one new man. We are the Church of God, as in second in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 32. But we move on to the Gentiles in the tribulation, and going to just move quickly here. You come to the sealed judgments during the first half of the tribulation. They will affect the Jews in Revelation 6. Some Gentile believers will be killed because of the harlot representing the worldwide religion at that time. Then Revelation 6, verses 9 through 11, during the fifth seal, a fourth of the Gentiles will be killed in Revelation 6:8 during the fourth seal. You have 10 kingdoms will come under the rule of the first beast, and this first beast in Revelation 13, I do point out someplace, he's going to be a Gentile. He's coming out of the sea, and the sea is used to describe Gentiles. You can see that a little later over in chapter 17, but also you can compare Daniel 7:8, where you have these kingdoms rising up. You have the first beast, the political ruler, as I say, as you said it in the next place here, he's a Gentile, comes out of the sea. The second beast comes out of the earth, and so he represents a Jew. But around mid-trib, you will have a conflict that will take place that will come out of the north. You have Gog of the land of Magog is going to come against Jerusalem. They're coming down for a spoil. And so they're coming down for goods and a spoil, according to Ezekiel 38, verse 12, and also 38 and 39 describe they're coming down at mid-trib as they're drawn down because they are looking for food and goods. And you also see the worldwide church will be mostly Gentile, which is described as the harlot city Babylon, Revelation 17 and 18, which should likely be Rome. Now, the Gentiles in the tribulation, I just had that. What did I put that there for again? The whole world comes, I don't know why I repeated myself.
Okay. Tribulation.
Oh, Great Tribulation. I just can't read. Okay, yes, that's right. I did read it right before, but I didn't read it right now. Now, the whole world comes under the authority of the first beast in Revelation 13, verses 5 and 6. They must worship the beast or the image of the beast, and they will come under economic boycott or death, and you see that in Romans, in Revelation 13, and I'll give you the verses there, and 8, 15, and 17. The world comes under the vile judgments or the bold judgments in Revelation 16. If they receive the message of the 144,000 serving them will be a demonstration of their faith, the faith of the ones believing, and I did skip through that, but over in Matthew 25:40, you have a whole description. If you give them drink, give them food, give them clothing, visit them in jail, that was a demonstration of their faith, and so on. Revelation chapters 12 through 17 deal with that. But they will go through the sheep and goat judgment. We pointed that out in Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46 again. And the saved will enter the kingdom. We looked at that in 34, verses 34 and 40. Unsaved the ghosts go to the lake of fire, 41, and so on. They will be involved in the campaign of Armageddon, which will be five battles that will culminate in the plains of Megiddo. And the participants, and I give you a little list, they're going to be different battles that are going to take place. You have different participants in those battles. The first beast in the image of Revelation 13 and the second beast, they're going to be involved in conflict in Jerusalem. You have from Daniel 11:40 through 42, the king of the south, Israel. Egypt is going to be, Egypt will push at the first beast, that is the world ruler. And then you have the king of the north, around Italy, will go down to Egypt to help his friend. You see these things in Daniel 11. The kings from the east arrive on the scene a little later from the northeast in Daniel 11. And you have tidings that come out of the east. The Euphrates will be dried up in Revelation 16:12. Also back in 9:13 through 21, you have some descriptions of the Euphrates, but it'll pave the way for the kings of the east. Christ then comes back when the kings of the north and south have surrounded Jerusalem. In Zechariah 12 and verse 2, but you see is coming back to the Mount of Olives in Zechariah 14:4, as he comes back in the same manner that he departed in Acts 1:11. But Christ will battle them in Jerusalem, in Edom, Bozrah, Isaiah 63:1-4, as he comes comes out from Bozrah. He's going to come in tromping on the wine press, and he's going to have tromping on a wine press with the blood that's going to be splattered all over his garments. There in Revelation 19:15, you have some further descriptions. Well, you have the descriptions in Revelation 19, and the final campaign will take place though in the plains of Megiddo in Revelation 16:14-16. At that point, there are demons who are going to be released at the sixth bowl or vial judgment, and they're going to gather men together for the campaign of the great day of God Almighty. Now, during the millennium, Gentiles will enter the kingdom on the basis of their faith, and you see that in Revelation 7, verses 9, 13, 14 through 17. And if they did if they did believe the 144,000 in evidence faith, especially Matthew 25. Now they will be on earth in non-glorified bodies, which can reproduce children, and so only believers will enter into the kingdom, but they will enter in and they will be able to reproduce. And so when they reproduce children, they will have children who will have the same kind of natures that they have, and they will have children who will not believe. And so some of their offspring will believe, no doubt, but some will not. And so you will have a revolt in the end again. But in Revelation 22:1-2, there will be those who do not have glorified bodies, who are walking on the earth, and they're going to walk in the light of the New Jerusalem and so forth. And in Isaiah 65 and verse 20, there will be some living. They will live 1,000 years on earth as the curse is removed, and that is Isaiah 65:20, and the same verses in Revelation 22. They will be beneath Christ, the church, and Israel. We're going to rule them along with Christ. We're going to shepherd them with a rod of iron, Revelation 2:26 and 28, during that time. That goes back to Psalm 2:7-9, but also you can look at Deuteronomy 28:13. But they're going to be required to go up at least once a year. I shouldn't say at least, they're going to go up once a year to the earthly Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles, and they're also going to have to go up to the New Jerusalem. But in Zechariah 14:16-19, if they don't go up, then the rain will be withheld from them. But in Zechariah 8:23, they're going to have to go up to the New Jerusalem to partake of the tree of life. And we might go ahead and look at Zechariah. I need to wrap it up soon here, so I'll keep you late. I'm sorry I have to hurry like this. I guess I could have skipped all of this, it's Zechariah 8:23. I forget where I was looking. Okay. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, Jehovah Sabaoth, the one over the heavenly armies, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold of the languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. And so God is with you, you Jews, so they're going to go. And so these will be Gentiles who will say, we will go up with you. And I don't believe they're going up to the earthly Jerusalem at this point, but they're going to go up to the New Jerusalem. And the reason will be because they need to partake of the fruit of the tree of life in order to survive during for the 1,000 years. And so they're going to have to do that at that time. And so we'll go over to Revelation, and I'll kind of move through these, but Revelation, we're coming down to the end of Revelation 21. Okay, 21 and verse 24, we see that, and the nations, can leave out part of that next part. The nation shall walk in the light of it, that is, of the New Jerusalem, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory and honor into it. And so as the New Jerusalem is like a chandelier hanging over, or a satellite over the earth, lighting half of the earth, they're going to walk in the light of it down here on earth. But they're going to have to bring, the kings of the earth are going to have to bring their leftovers up there. And it's back in the in Matthew, you have to, if where your heart is, there where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. But they're, if they have overage, they're going to take it up to the New Jerusalem. And then but they will be walking in the light of it, but they're going to have to go up to the New Jerusalem. And you do see all of the descriptions in these chapters, but you do have 22:2. I want to look at that for just a moment. Coming out of the throne, you have this. You do have a river coming down, and in the midst of the street, you have one street, but it's divided by the river going through it, coming down from the apex of the city, flowing down, and on either side of the river was there the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And so they would have to come up to partake of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the city, and we'll have to leave that there. When we move into the Gentiles in eternity, they will be on the new earth. Those who are living in who survive into the kingdom, and those who are those outside of the church believers will be on the new earth in redeemed bodies. God will temporarily be in their midst, here on the new earth, not here, but on the new earth, God will dwell with them and be their God, and they will be His people, as will the Jews, and they will be to God's glory. And so, one last reference, and then we will wrap it up. But in 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 12 and 13, and this will be true as it was. You have new heavens and new earth, but it'll apply to the Gentiles who are believers then, as it will to believing Jews in eternity future, as it will to the church in eternity future. One thing we will share in common. And he says, looking forward, literally, earnestly expecting and hasting the coming of the day of God, because of which it should read, the heavens and the being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, are earnestly expecting, we're anticipating a new quality of heavens and a new quality of earth, wherein righteousness, I'm going to retranslate that, dwelleth, wherein righteousness is settled down and at home. Righteousness will settle down and be at home in the future. And so that's what we anticipate, a new heavens, new earth, where righteousness does settle down and is at home. And so, again, a tremendous thing to anticipate. And so that's that is as far as we'll go. So just remember, God sees three different races of people. Throughout history and down through time, those who've lived in the past, God has made promises to different peoples, different promises, they have different hopes. There are different hopes. They're not the same as what we have as grace believers. And there are three different sets of promises. And so if you have to get a hope, you have a promise. And so if you have a promise, you get hope. And we do have a happy hope, a blessed hope, and a living hope based upon a living Savior. They have good hope. They have hope based upon a promise. They have earthly promises. We have heavenly promises. But also remember that there are three different futures for the Jew, the Gentile, and the Church of God. And they will all be good for those who are believers. Today there's Jew and Gentile. There are some, and they are unsaved today. If they're Jews and Gentiles today, they're not saved. But in the past, there were Jews who were saved and those who were unsaved. And you had then with the Gentiles today, once you become a believer, you're no longer a Jew. God doesn't count you to be a Jew any longer. And so you're part of a new race. And but if you're a Gentile today, you're not a believer because God doesn't see you as a Gentile anymore once you're saved either. But in the future, there will be some Jews and some Gentiles who will come out of the tribulation to go into the kingdom. Some who will survive that. Some will be saved in the kingdom. And but there will be... there will be unbelievers as well, but there will be a division in the future. Those who will go to judgment, to the great white throne, and those who will inherit the new earth in the future. But we can be thankful again that our hope is not to pass through a tribulation period and not to enter into a kingdom here on earth, but our anticipation is to see our Savior face to face when He will catch us up to be with Himself, and the time when we will be changed and we will be like Him, and we will be conformed and transformed into the image of His dear Son, and we will be all that we are positionally in Christ will be our experience then. Father, we're thankful for this time we've been able to share with these folks, looking at these things, dealing with future events, and we're thankful again that you have given us just a little snapshot just of what's going to take place in the future. Many things in your word dealing with the future, but yet we're thankful that as we look at them, that we do have some tremendous promises that do give us a blessed hope. And so as we focus on these things, might we be happy believers as we do anticipate the coming of your Son to catch us away to be with Himself. Again, we're thankful for the hope that lieth within us, and we're grateful again for yourself and for your grace. Again, as we move on in the evening, we'd ask for rest and strength for this. We move through the week, and might you use each one of us to accomplish the good works you have for us for this week, and as we do so, might we accomplish them to your glory, and we'd be grateful for that now. Amen. Next Tuesday, we begin a new quarter, and I'm dealing with soteriology, the doctrine of salvation, and my brother will be doing spirit beings, is what I understand.
And the notes will be on the web
And the notes will be on the web before next Tuesday. I was Sandy promised that, so you can print them out. And maybe this evening my exam will be on the web also. And I will say that if you take the exam, the answers are at the bottom. And as I always have to remind folks, if you cheat, that doesn't matter to me, but it's between you and God. He'll see if you do cheat, if you look at the answers at the bottom of the page. Okay. Well, thank you. So I will say good night, and I see David. I see Bob, I see Steve, and I see Priscilla here, and I see the folks in Monroe, and Kathy, and the iPad, and I'll say goodnight to whoever's here.
Good night, everybody.